This is Women's Voices and Women's Stories on Yin Radio, and I'm your host, Sandy Billings. Summer, it's travel time. Since we're well into summer, this Yin Radio show will carry us to summer destinations so that we can explore and escape and discover. From KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, this is Yin Radio, and the theme today is summer travel. Installment number one comes from 2 years ago, just before the summer hit. I was sitting around a table at Pizza Hut with my friends, and I asked them what they plan to do during the coming summer.
What are you going to do for your summer vacation?
I'm going to do lots of boating and backpacking and camping. And I'm going to go visit friends and go rafting, and I'm going to spend as much time outside as I possibly can.
I'm going to find a job and work outside in the yard.
And what kind of job do you want to find? One that's also outside?
I don't know. I don't know what kind of job I want to find. And I'm going to record a CD of music.
Music you play?
Sing.
The sample?
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
You're full of it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to hold it.
I'm going to clean up my carbon fiber road bike and ride it a few times this summer.
Yay.
Otherwise, no other plans.
Piano? Same. Okay.
I'm going to work and have no fun all summer. Yeah. That's it.
We can help you with that. Not the working part. Not having fun, we can help turn it around.
All right, that sounds good.
But you have to actively.
So how are you going to help me have fun this summer?
We're going to go boating and backpacking and hiking and camping, and we're going to spend as much time outside as we possibly can.
Wonderful.
What are you going to do for your summer vacation?
And I'm going to buy a house.
I'm going to move 2 times. Because that's so much fun. And I'm going to buy a house. And that'll be one of the moves. I'm going to work a little bit for money.
You're going to buy 2 houses?
No, just going to move 2x. And I'm going to go hiking and camping and rafting and fishing. And I'm going to catch lots and lots of fish, and I'm going to eat them all myself and not share any with you.
Yeah.
She doesn't like fish. She's crazy.
Oh, silly girl.
Yep.
And I'm going to do my radio show and make it better. And I'm going to work a new job, waiting tables at the Red Door. And I guess that's enough for one summer. And my sister's going to come visit.
Yay! Cherry bee!
Cherry bee!
Cherry
bee!
Cherry berry! Cherry berry!
And then we'll go, when she comes, we're going to go hiking and camping and fishing and rafting and boating.
And looking for Sasquatch.
Exactly.
How do you say it? Did I say it right?
Okay, what do we think our server's gonna say?
I bet she's gonna say she's gonna be leaving town soon to go back home to Southern Idaho. Someplace.
I'll agree with the Southern Idaho, but I'll say she's not leaving. She's working all summer.
That's right. I agree. I concur.
for our summer. So we want to know what you're doing this summer.
I am going to be working the summer here at Pizza Hut.
That's thrilling. Are you going to do anything else?
You know, I'm not sure. I would like to go on some vacations, but it just depends on the money. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, that's exciting. Thank you, guys. Any refills on drinks or anything?
Travels often take us home in the summer to visit family, friends, for weddings, graduations, births, and funerals. Whatever it is that takes us home, it can be an important rediscovery, as I found out during my travels to my home state of Florida, after having lived in Idaho 4 years. Sometimes we have to see this old familiar landscape through another's eyes in order to make the rediscovery. I made a rediscovery through Lydia's eyes.
I used to travel quite a bit for my work. I was a university fundraiser, and fundraisers go where the donors are. I kept mostly to the west, with the heaviest concentration of travel near home, in Washington and Idaho. But I also got out to D.C., to Florida, and points in between at least a couple times a year. I never expected to enjoy travel so much, but especially not travel to Florida. It's my home. I left my native Florida to come to Idaho. It was a bold leap of faith for me, a drastic change of scenery, and I had no evidence I could live with it. But I was ready to escape Florida. See, Florida is so hot that it burns my really paper-white skin. It makes me break out in itches, and if the sun's not too bold, the mosquitoes are going to cause itching instead. That flat, bare ground, it's a dull shade of sand. It's unbroken by changes in elevation. Even the trees seem stumped and beaten by the dullness of days without change. Always hot, always bright, always the same. This is the Florida that I escaped. I never thought I would enjoy visiting Florida so much as I do, now that I've found Idaho to be my true home. I arrived in Moscow on August 16th, in the heat of summer, and was baffled by the cool evenings here. In Florida, when it got up to 80 degrees, you know, those cool days of fall or spring when it only got up to 80, when the night fell, the temperature would plunge to, what, 70, sometimes 65? Here things are really different. So it was August. I'm in Idaho. And it not only stayed down to a comfortable 80-some-odd degrees for the high temperature, but it really and truly did plunge after sunset. It got downright cold to this Floridian. I wore turtlenecks in part of August and pretty much all of September, even though most people around me were wearing short sleeves and shorts. The day that I arrived in Idaho, Lydia showed me around campus. I was totally in her care, as I had no car, no house, no bearings, no nothing. Lydia was to be my secretary, but probably Mother would have described her role better. Lydia is an Idaho native. She's from Preston, Idaho, and she had been in Moscow for about 5 years at the time. To me, she knew everything. I was an ignorant, innocent babe in her care, and everything was new to me. She drove me to campus on my first day of work, and I took a deep, appreciative breath of the morning air as we got out of the car. Noticing it, Lydia commented that it sure was quite muggy today. I looked over at her to see if she was kidding. She had to be kidding. This was like a winter morning in Florida, like the day after a cold front just came through. The cold front would bring rain, cooling everything off so that the humidity would drop from its normal drinkable 80-something percent down to something reasonable and crisp. And it would cool down the winter temperatures to 50 or 60-some-odd degrees. But when Lydia said this about it being muggy in Idaho in August, I looked at her out of the corner of my eye, and I really had to laugh to see that she wasn't kidding. So I asked her, what do you think it is, maybe 15% humidity? And she realized, I think in that moment, that my world in Florida was as foreign to her as her world in Idaho was to me. So she smiled and she laughed and said, oh yeah, okay, maybe 10% or so. Lydia introduced me to country living and small towns and winter. She told me about wheat and lentils and seasons and snow tires. She also arranged my travel, selecting seats in the aisle and flights that were cheap but with decent connections. and she wrote itineraries that included where to pick up the rental car, how to navigate to the hotel and to each destination, and how to get back to the airport, and who would be at each meeting, and the background material about the people and the purpose. And as Lydia did this work for me, I learned that she had never traveled very far from home. She had never seen a palm tree, nor Spanish moss, certainly never the Atlantic Ocean. But she had been to Germany, and she played the violin, and she had a degree in communications and husband, and she certainly knew more about nature, including human nature, than the average Jane. But here in Idaho, it was all new to me. I was the stranger in a strange land. For me in Idaho, visiting this new place, see, it felt like visiting even though I was moving here. This was like the best of all travel. It was like childlike wonder that my eyes saw in a new way. I saw the wheat fields, all golden and rippling in waves. Amber waves of grain really existed. And they live here on sumptuous and undulating hills, waves of earth, waves of wheat on waves of dirt. The air, crisp and clear, the sharpest skies this astronomy student has ever seen, covered these broad, deep, black skies every August night. So dark were these skies that each meteor caught the eye, and every night I could look through the window and see one or two falling stars before I drifted off to sleep. Coyote calls fascinated me and my dog, scaring us a little, just enough of a scare to liven the senses and spark imagination. Everything was new, and I was a child in it. After just a month, I headed back to Florida to pick up my car and drive it out to Idaho. I flew into Orlando and drove to my old home on the Atlantic coast before I headed out for my cross-country adventure back to Idaho. As usual, Lydia prepared my travel out to Florida, making notes and plans, considering my preferences and needs, to get me to a place that she had never seen and that I knew all too well. But I landed in Florida with new eyes now, with Idaho eyes, with Lydia's eyes. Having begun a discovery of Lydia's world, I somehow took her eyes with me, and I saw my old world with these new eyes. Eyes that had never seen the wonders of Florida. With Lydia's eyes, I saw palm trees as fascinating, their naked trunks stretching up to these sharp tufts. No shade from these silly trees, but there was a real majesty and slender grace that I hadn't noticed before. With Lydia's eyes, I saw hibiscus flowers that bloom practically year-round, and wondered at the crocus plants, spider plants, mother-in-law tongues, all other kinds of house plants that grow huge and boisterous outside. No frost to cut them back. The Spanish moss made the live oaks look sad, but dreamy. And the bright beeches seemed like picture postcards, but larger and deeper, brighter, bigger, real. Real Florida beaches. With Lydia's eyes, it was a good place. Maybe not a place she or I would choose to live, but a good place. It was a place to discover, to wonder at, to see everything anew, like a child. When I came back and described the trip to Lydia, she looked at me like she was looking at a child, the child I had become. She indulged me, she enjoyed my discoveries, went with me on the virtual trip of my telling. She said she was glad that I took her eyes with me. Travel always awakens the childlike wonder in me. After being in Idaho so long, I sometimes have to remember to look at it, to look for it, and find that wonder by noticing the new things in old places. New things like the frost that appear suddenly one fall evening after a long and scorching summer, during which I no longer wear turtlenecks. Now I wait until November, and sometimes even later. I see the sky new when Orion comes over the horizon for winter, or when Scorpio first shows his red heart each summer. Being from Florida, and with my people back there still, sometimes I can borrow their eyes and see Idaho again for the first time through them. I'm going back to Florida for a family wedding next month, July. I haven't been looking forward to going to Tallahassee in July. My sister says she won't go on any discoveries with me. It's going to be too hot. It already is too hot. And if I insist on walking around on even at the grotto-like sinkholes or biking to the lighthouse at St. Mark's, she says I'm going to take a book and sit in the car with the air conditioner on. That's the only way she'll take me there. But even if I stay mostly inside, though, there's a unique Deep South and Old Florida feel about the place, even though it has all its Walmarts and Outback Steakhouses and Albertsons groceries. I just have to remember to see that uniqueness, to see the sweet tea on the menu, even at McDonald's, see that the red Georgia clay along the shoulders of the roads, which the roads themselves are canopied by huge oaks dripping with Spanish moss. I have to see it all new and with wonderment. So, again, I'll just have to take Lydia's eyes with me. Wishing you joy and wonder whether you do a staycation or a vacation this summer. Installment number 3 is about water, because water is a staple of summer outings. Andrea Clark Mason sought water on the wild rivers of the West when she was training to be a whitewater rafting guide. Now, as a writer and a teacher of nonfiction, Andrea, of course, wrote about the adventure. Installment number 3, Andrea Clark Mason reads from her essay, Swiftwater Safety.
So I'm going to start about a third of the way through this essay titled Swiftwater Safety. And as Bob said, I'm from Philadelphia. And here are a few things that are in the essay before we get to this point. When I moved west, I had what I think of as an arsenal of Western fantasies about who I would become when I moved west and what I would look like, what I would do with my time, etc. And one of those things was becoming a rafting guide. I'd gone rafting when I was 14 with my family on the Salmon River in near Stanley, Idaho, and that's how I first came to know Idaho. I don't think I knew where it was before that, but I fell in love. And one summer several years ago, I decided to try this out, to try to become a weekend rafting guide. And the day before the start of the Swiftwater safety course, which was kind of an optional safety course to take before the guide training started, my boyfriend at the time dumped me. And there's a flashback that takes place shortly into the reading, so if you notice it's a different setting, that's what's going on. There's a blank space to indicate that in the essay. In my borrowed booties, helmet, gloves, several layers of fleece, splash jacket, and over top of that, my new hot pink life jacket, I follow the boys. The boys in their dry suits, the boys who are mostly younger than me, stronger than me, shorter than me, and not crying. I follow the boys knowing that in their $600 dry suits, they will not feel the chill of the melted mountaintop snow. They are spots of blue and yellow, shocking against the gray, brown, and dull green of the landscape. I follow them as they descend a gravelly bank overgrown with shrubs to the shore of the river, the vast, swift-moving river, 100 wide yards of brown, smooth, beautiful water. Sam asked at the initial interview, "So, you like to raft?" She held a clipboard and pen in hand, her strawberry blonde curls bobbing. I nodded enthusiastically. I thought of our family trip down the river 14 years earlier, lazy stretches of calm water, my skimpy bikini, a cold can of root beer in my hand, life jacket unzipped, no booties, no helmet. I was also a rower on my high school crew. That was on a polluted flat river in Philadelphia, but I also rode through a few class 2 and 3 rapids on a trip down the Snake River with friends. Then I was successful, steering the raft through rapids with oar strokes that felt familiar. Also, perhaps I was young enough then, 22, not to care what might have happened if I was not successful. "We'll teach you everything you need to know," she said confidently. To pass the course, a whitewater rescuer has to be able to throw, coil, and throw a rescue rope in 45 seconds. David stands behind us and off to one side, clicking his stopwatch. I can't not think about William. His skin, his scent, how he doesn't want to be with me anymore. I throw the rope at the imaginary target and then coil it, tears sliding down my cheeks. The cold, slick rocks, the wide rushing river, would it be so bad to give up and drive home? What prevents me? My mother's voice saying it would build character. She also paid the $200 to take the course. But I have enough character, and the $200, she'd understand. But then I return to the unchanging fact that I need a distraction, and this is a good one. We live three blocks apart, and when I arrive home, all I will want is to see him, for him to tell me he's changed his mind, and he won't have. Of course, he won't have. That's what he meant when he said he was sure. That's what he meant when he said he was sorry. Like everyone else, I am throwing and coiling my yellow nylon rope, neon, against the cool brown of the river. Throw, coil, throw, coil. I take a deep breath and dive off the rock into the water. I want to prove myself, to show I'm strong, that I'm not the crybaby and confused knot tire I've been all morning, that I can withstand a breakup and then swim down the swollen middle fork of the Salmon River, that I have stamina. The water is cold, but the first thing I feel is the rushing current, moving and breathing, bigger than anything I have ever known. It pulls me. I try to show the group on shore that there are some things I can do. I can swim. I swim as hard and fast as I can out into the river. David, on shore in his yellow dry suit, is shouting and waving one arm, but I can't hear him. I know I'm farther out in the river than the boys were, but the current has paralyzed me. I lie on my back, my feet pointing downstream, my arms sculling, defensive swimming position, all I can remember of the talk. When I reach the buttress of the bridge, I push off with tennis-shoed feet. I miss the hole, but I do not miss the white water, which covers my head. I look up and see white. I'm swallowing water. The current envelops me, trying to sweep me into the middle of the river. I see the yellow ropes lingering on the water's surface, but they are too far away, and the current drags me swiftly, efficiently past each of them. We have already learned the cardinal rule. You are responsible for your own rescue. When the tall boy with the long blonde hair tosses the last rope, adrenaline courses through my body as I swim as hard as I can towards it. As soon as my hands touch the rope, I hold on tight until I'm out of the current. He starts to coil the rope, signaling me to let go, but I say, no, can't I just stay here? Between labored breaths, as I hang there in the water clutching the rope, I notice my knuckles are white. When I finally climb onto the rock, my limbs still shaking, my breath still rattling and heavy, I hear David saying, Andrea, you were too far out. So that my chest can feel less constricted, I start to unzip my life jacket until David says, don't ever unzip your life jacket. Well, the next person is going, probably a boy with 8 years of rafting experience. David approaches me and leans over, his face close to mine, as I sit, still panting, on one of the rocks. Didn't you hear me or see me waving? You were too far out. I couldn't hear you, I say, gulping air. Why didn't you come further in? He glances now and then at the boy who's smiling and swimming not too hard for any of the yellow ropes near him. I couldn't, I say, my breath still wheezing and labored. What do you mean you couldn't? Don't you remember what we talked about on the bridge? I couldn't remember, I say, my breath finally regaining some sense of normalcy. You panicked, he says, standing up. And you know what will happen if you panic while you're guiding? The people in your boat will panic and there will be death. It's clear he's trying to scare me into paying attention, but at that very moment, he doesn't make me want to try harder. Perhaps the fact that I am in my late instead of my early 20s is sufficient edge on maturity to know I'm not immortal. Perhaps, unlike these other seasoned beer-guzzling guides, I know I will die, and I don't want it to be this summer. Later that summer, someone would die on that stretch of that river, an accounting professor at University of Idaho. His dog, outfitted with a life jacket, would swim his 7-year-old daughter to safety. In that moment, my fantasies of lazy afternoons full of bikinis and beer have turned to thoughts of lawsuits and drowned grandmothers. We had three more scenarios that afternoon, swimming over a strainer, rescuing an unconscious person trapped on a rock offshore, and capsizing and then uprighting a wooden boat called a dory. I swim over the half-submerged log. I help, as much as 10 boys in their early 20s will let me, rescue the unconscious person, David, off the rock. I do not help capsize or upright the dory. Still shivering in my wetsuit, I watch each pair of people go out, rowing the dory 30 feet or so offshore and then capsizing it, uprighting it and rowing it out for a short ride in the current before coming back in. Each pair is all smiles as they row, and although the scene is stunning, the late afternoon sun casting through ponderosa pines, I remember the chill of the water, the pull of the current, how hypnotic the river looked when I dove in. How could anything so beautiful be so dangerous? That night, we meet up at the rafting company headquarters, a two-story house with an office and supply downstairs and a house upstairs where the owner of the company lives in the summer. Upstairs, the boys from my class are making tacos. Girls my students' age wear midriffs, drink Milwaukee's Best, and watch Dumb and Dumber. The room looks uncomfortably like the scenes in college I tried my best to avoid. I sit in a chair in the corner. The guys and the girls are flirting about who's having a party when. I imagine in a month or two how it will be just like summer camp. Everyone will be asking who slept with whom, and at some point, one of the guys my student's age will make it a mission to get romantic with the WSU instructor. Eventually, David shows up, Sam tagging along behind him. This morning, they arrived at the park together as well, each with takeout breakfast from a restaurant. I suppose I have no reason to know if they're dating, but in this culture, a few casual nights together seems like an accepted practice. David congratulates everyone on a good day. I wonder if that includes my lecture about panic and death. He asks if everyone has eaten, looking specifically at me. I nod, even though I've only been able to stomach a few bites of the hot sandwich I ordered at the restaurant. David announces we will be watching a DVD called Swept Away. I am the only one who has a pen and paper out for taking notes. A healthy-looking woman in her mid-30s with shoulder-length auburn hair comes on screen. She wears a hard hat and a life preserver. She talks about the many reasons people might be watching this film. She discusses the casualties that happen yearly, resulting from poor decisions, panic, and ill-preparedness. While in back of her flows what looks like a shallow, bubbling stream on a beautiful spring day, she calmly informs us how every year people die in swift water from asphyxiation. She tells us about how they swim for a while, swallow some water, breathe in some water, then, in panic, breathe in more water and drown. The film then cuts to several scenes of city police wearing dress shoes and no life preservers, trying to rescue citizens from flash floods. Sirens ring and images of white sheets draped over stretchers fill the screen. Between each cautionary tale, the woman narrates instructions for tying different knots. Although I dutifully copy the pictures, I know the directional figure eight and the double figure eight on a bite will still elude me tomorrow. The last section of the film shows whitewater adventures in rafts. David pauses the film. What's wrong with this picture? I have no idea, but everyone else does. The boat is overloaded, the boys say, between bites of taco. David nods and resumes the movie. No matter how hard she tries, David continues, the guide is too small to turn the boat. We watch as the boat approaches a fork in the river. All the boats go to the right, except the one David has pointed to. The guide paddles furiously to turn the boat, but instead, the boat catches on a rock in the middle of the river. Watch that woman right there, David says, pointing to the screen. As the river sucks the boat's upstream pontoon underwater, the rafters, one by one, fall out of the boat and are carried around the river's bend. Three heads go downstream. The lady David pointed to disappears under a towering wall of logs and debris. One of the rafters is climbing the log jam. Then the videotaper says, "Hold on there, buddy. Keep climbing. I'm coming to get ya." The cut stops. David pauses the film before the next knot tying instruction. There was a huge lawsuit over that, and it was 6 months before the water was low enough to retrieve that woman's body. I imagine if that was my mother, my sister, me, if I was that guide. "That's a shady company," one of the boys says. "It was in Washington, near the Cascades. The water was freezing. I heard about that. The name is rubbed out, but I know who it was. Totally shady company. Always overloaded their boats. Had a buddy who worked for them." The lady by the pastoral stream reviews the basics. Reach, row, throw, go, helo. Always wear a personal flotation device. You are your own rescuer. The film is over. There's one day left to the course.
Andrea Clark Mason is on the faculty at Washington State University. You're listening to Yin Radio, featuring women's voices and women's stories. The theme of today's show is summer travel. When Scott High was in high school in southern Idaho, he made his first trip without his parents, to France. It was quite a learning experience.
I love to travel. I've been traveling most of my life, and I spend the most of it traveling with my family. I've traveled to Western Canada, all over France on two separate trips, and Florence, Venice, and Rome, Italy. I've also traveled to as many Western states and as far east as Georgia and Florida. I love experiencing new things. Being from a small town, there's not a lot of opportunities to experience new things. I can do this while traveling. That's why I enjoy it so much. The best experience I had while traveling was traveling to different countries. On my first trip to France, I was by myself. It was the first time I was traveling without my family. I was with a school group for a week in Paris, and I was supposed to meet a friend who lived in Angers after my school group left me stranded at a hotel. That's when it hit me. I was alone in a country where I had only 2 years of high school experience in the language. What was I to do? Where was I to go? The only thing on my schedule at the time was to meet my friend who would not be arriving for another 7 hours. I decided I was going to do some sightseeing. It felt great. Being in another country alone with no one to tell me where to go or what to do gave me this freedom I had never felt before at age 15. I kind of felt like Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone, though. The one thing I loved but found to be quite frustrating at times was getting around. A word of advice for travelers who are planning on traveling to France: do not ask for help in English. If you don't know how to say it in French, you will get nowhere. Having a French teacher, I felt prepared for the best and worst of France. I knew this going into the trip. I learned as much French as possible and found the people of France were very nice to me when I asked them questions in French. Even if what I said was very broken and my accent horrible, they still helped me out. There's this unspoken rule in France that when you travel in their country, they expect you to speak French. They will ignore you if you speak English. This reminds me of some travelers I know who got very angry when people wouldn't help them as they are screaming at them in English and expected the French to speak English back to them. Kind of a double-edged, ironic sword. As I made my way through Paris on my own, I was amazed at people who go on trips and complain about getting around in the cities and complain about the people as if they were vastly different than Americans. If a 15-year-old boy who has never been to France can get around one of Europe's biggest cities on his own, then anyone should be able to do it, right? Wrong. I find that no matter where I go, lazy Americans are there complaining about things that are not American and help they cannot receive because they don't understand that yelling at somebody in English won't make them understand you. I found out quickly that if I wanted to get anywhere, I must be forced to learn the language and customs. When my friend Mogali came to pick me up, we immediately boarded a high-speed train to a town known famous for its 24-hour car race held every year in June, Le Mans 24 Heures, 24 hours. This car race is one of the biggest car races I have ever seen. It makes America's NASCAR look childish. These cars race non-stop for 24 hours, rain or shine. Given the place of the town, you can pretty much count on rain. I was with my friend who had taken me not only to see the race, but accompanied her while she worked. Her job was to drive the race car drivers around to their pit crews. On the start day, I spent most of the day in the stands watching it along with 200,000 other enthusiasts. At night, when Mogali started her shift, I found myself with her and the Team Bentley race crew. One of the drivers was looking for my friend, being as I was the only person who spoke English besides the Bentley pit crew and the driver, he asked me to interpret for him. In return, he gave me a flag. Being able to interpret for him, I felt useful for once. While I was with Mogali and her family, I was forced to speak French, and only French. They were understanding of the fact that I did not know a lot of French and would help me with my interpretation. I found this to be the most useful thing they taught me. No matter where I would go, I would give it my best shot and speak the language. On my second trip back to France, I was with my family and the same school group I had gone with 2 years prior. I felt 100 times better prepared on this trip. I knew more French, and I felt like Paris well enough to get around on my own. With a high school group, we had rules to follow, though. One night, much to my parents' and my teachers' dismay, I decided I was going to avoid the rule and go exploring with my friends. From our second-story hotel room, we tied two blankets together, one end to the balcony, and the other end led down to the street. For fear of being caught, we thought this was the best way to escape. We shimmied down the blankets and onto the midnight streets of Paris. We did not travel far, though. We only traveled about 3 blocks down to this bar we noticed was still open. We ordered some drinks, this is also where I got to experience real French absinthe, and sat outside in the moonlight soaking it all in. I had no idea that my French teacher saw the bedsheet and caught me red-handed. When we got back from the bar, stumbled into the hotel, our French teacher was reading quietly in the lounge area. She confronted us and sat us down. She had asked us if we had thought we were in danger. I quickly said no, because I felt that I was not in danger, because we knew where we were and how to get back. I felt she did not understand me. She had a right to be mad. We were violating her rules. If something were to happen to any one of us, it would have been on her shoulders. But do I regret it? No. I felt I experienced a part of French culture I would not have experienced otherwise. My French teacher taught me how to speak the language. My friend taught me how to act. For me, it was knowing the difference of the two and how to conduct myself in situations. That is where I figured out the cultural differences and learned to love every minute of traveling.
Scott High was interning at Yin Radio when he wrote and produced that piece. Installment number 5 is about virtual travel and the connections that we make when meeting people over the internet. It comes from writer Hasmita Chander, who lives in India. I met Hasmita over the internet, and she read this short essay for me by phone.
Being an ambassador. The internet, at a glance, seems to be a mass of unknown and hidden people. You can lead an entirely different life online with a new name, a different gender and profession. But this view is only at a glance. When you spend time here, you get to know people, you can tell who's faking, who's real, and you also get to make some good friends. Even in this gigantic network, chances are you won't meet people of many countries, or you may just meet one person from a country other than yours. And this person forms a lasting impression, bam, in your mind. You get an impression of what his country is, what kind of people live there, how they think and feel and behave, all based on your interaction with this one person. You can argue that this is not fair, it's not balanced, it's not right. But it's the truth. It happens. So let's be careful and be our best, especially in our conversations with people from other countries, online or otherwise. You may be having a bad day and shoot off a hasty, rough reply to the message from your new Japanese acquaintance. You think you can always apologize later if you remember to, but what you wrote has already made an impression. I'm not saying to pretend or be perfect, how boring that would be, but be courteous, be nice, and be yourself too. I don't know how many people I've rubbed the wrong way, but I do know that I've made India a good place for a few people in other countries. It was wonderful to get a mail from an editor I worked with online in the US. He wrote to me saying, India will always be a warm place to me because I have known you. Thanks to my own interactions with such ambassadors on the internet, Malaysia, America, England, Hong Kong, and Australia will always be warm places to me.
Hasmita Chander on being an ambassador over the internet. We started this summer travel show by asking people what they plan to do over the summer. Now we end it by checking in with folks around town at the end of their summer travels last year.
Where did you go this summer? Where did you travel to?
Oh, gosh. Well, we didn't have a long summer vacation where we took 2 weeks and went to one place, but we took advantage of some 3- and 4-day weekends, and we went on a wonderful rafting trip on the, I want to say the Rogue River, but that's what I did with Anna in December, and we went on the Grand Ronde.
Is where I bet you went.
The Grand Ronde. You have a feeling I went there.
I do.
So that was a really nice trip, and we just got back from a trip to the Tri-Cities. We went and saw Dave Matthews in the Gorge. We did a brief backpacking trip with a girlfriend of ours, and that was in the wilderness area near the Salmon River. And otherwise, we spent a lot of our days enjoying Moscow in the summer, which was really great. We did a lot of farmers markets and a lot of community events, fundraisers, and functions like that.
Cool.
And since the summer isn't over, we're planning on doing a canoe trip with our friends and their little baby, and we're not sure where yet. Maybe on the Flathead.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that was our summer. That's where we went.
That's cool. Tell me also, where do you want to go? And this is not this summer, not whenever. What's a travel dream for you?
We definitely have a travel dream. And Tom and I would both really love to go to Italy. And that's been a dream that we've had ever since we started talking about traveling. So we're hoping that we can make that a reality in 1 or 2 summers, where we would actually take a month off from work, plan ahead of time, rent out a house, and do some bicycle touring and sightseeing, and that would be a dream. But there's a lot of research that we have to do before we do that, so we still have some work to do. And then a lifetime dream of traveling is we want to see all of the continents and the wonders of the world. So the man-made wonders of the world and the natural wonders of the world, and then also visit every continent. It's kind of a lifetime travel goal.
That's great.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
Do it.
Yesterday we saw the 8th wonder of the world, which is Grand Coulee Dam. They claim that they're the 8th man-made wonder of the world. I don't know if that's true or not. But that was pretty interesting.
Do you know what some of those wonders are off the top of your head? Natural and or man-made?
Yeah. Some are water, water forms. So Niagara Falls is like a gigantic waterfall. And then the Amazon and the Nile, just for their size and capacity of carrying that much water. And then other ones are, your classic, like the pyramids, the Parthenon, most of them ancient Greece and Athens type, either buildings or statues. And then some of the man-made ones would be like the Taj Mahal or some of the, like the bridge and the California Bridge, Golden Gate Bridge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for asking. It's always fun.
What did you do with your summer vacation?
Huh. My summer vacation's still going.
Good. And what are you going to do? Or what have you done? Where have you gone?
Where have I gone? Well, we went to Saugus, Frank Church and Saugus, went backpacking, been rafting, been in the Oregon coast, been to California, watched my friend do her first half Ironman. What else did I do? I moved.
Moved?
Here.
From?
Eugene.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Wow. Welcome.
Back. I used to be here.
Still welcome back.
Thank you. And actually, the biggest thing I'm doing over my summer vacation is looking for a job.
You want to put a plug on the radio about what kind of job?
If anyone's looking to hire. What kind of job? That's the question of the hour.
What did you do? What did you do? Where'd you go on your summer vacation? Where'd you go? No, I'm going to put it in her face. She's my friend. I can do this. I know.
She's been hanging with you. Don't you think she's used to being annoyed by now?
Yeah. I just know that in April I might be going to Mexico.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Is that a dream trip or just a trip you want to do?
It's just a random trip that I've been invited to go on. It's my old boss at a grocery store that I used to work at. Her and a couple of friends.
Yeah.
One of them used to be my junior high PE teacher.
Yeah.
They're all going to Mexico, so they invited me to go.
That's cool.
What is your
I want to go.
They also said what happens in Mexico stays in Mexico.
Where did you go this summer during your summer vacation?
I stayed here at One World during summer.
All summer?
All summer long. I went to Boise a couple times back home on vacation and went on a few little trips, went rafting down the Middle Fork.
Oh, that's a good trip. Mm-hmm. Now, the other question, where do you want to go? If you can go anywhere in the world, what's a dream trip for you?
Dream trip for me would be to Japan. Although, I'm terrified of getting lost there because I don't speak any Japanese.
Yeah. Would you go by yourself or would you buffer it by trying to...
I think it'd be fascinating to go by myself because I've never really been on a trip out of the country or on a trip by myself, so... I don't know. Otherwise, I'd like my friends to be there, of course.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you. On your summer vacation, did you travel anywhere?
I went to Seattle. Uh-huh. I spent 4 days in Seattle at Seattle Pride. And that was my big summer vacation event. My partner and I went over and celebrated and were prideful and had a great... That was kind of our big summer adventure. So.
That's cool. Yeah. Have you ever been before?
It was my second time.
Yeah.
And so...
I know San Francisco Pride and it's something.
Right.
And of course I was at Moscow. Seattle Pride's got to be...
It's big. Large. It is very large. And in the past couple years they've moved it down to Seattle Center. So it's... You know, a lot bigger than it used to be. It used to just be in Volunteer Park on Capitol Hill, and so it's really taking kind of a centerpiece in for that weekend in Seattle, and it's more of a community event now than just, you know, a pride event. So
cool.
2.5 hour long parade. It's a huge parade and lots of people. So
that's great. Yeah. Tell me one of the big parade things that you remember.
This year it was really political. I would assume because of the elections and everything, very political. But 1400 Rights was one of the big groups that came through, and that's 1400 Rights would be the amount of rights that you get through marriage that LGBT couples are denied of. So I think that was one of the most influential groups that came through. It really caught my eye.
And one other question, follow-up question, is what's your dream trip?
My dream trip?
Anywhere in the world.
I'm going to have to say, I really want to go to Brazil. I've done a little bit of South America, and so I'd really like to go to Brazil and just participate in Carnival and do all that. I think that would be a really amazing trip and just very culturally unique, and I think that would probably be one of my ultimate dream trips that I could go on.
Thank you. Where'd you go this summer?
I went to Glacier National Park for a week, and we backpacked around the upper and lower quartz lakes. And then I went... Will this be too much noise?
Yeah.
And then I went to Alaska and did a 4-day backpacking trip with my mom and sisters on the Resurrection Pass.
Just the women?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a rare opportunity. Who'd you go to Glacier with?
With my roommates. My old roommates from college, Meg and Carrie. Also only women.
Wow. And then what did you do for your cap? Since we're on a roll here with this all-women thing.
And then I had an all-women's riding and backpacking trip in the Wallawa Mountains.
Yeah. Do you know, is it different to do the all-women thing versus mixed? Do you know? Different quality to it?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
From my experience.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a different tone of a trip.
Yeah.
I think.
I would think so too.
I'm sure it depends on who you're with.
I'm sure. Yeah.
But.
I was just curious what your take was on it, because I've had some family outings too.
Uh-huh.
All girls. Uh-huh. Or just the girls went. And they're different than when we mix in the guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know how to describe it. But I've never done anything that adventurous, so you have an adventurous group.
Yeah. I do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Where'd you go for your summer vacation?
Well, I didn't get that much of a summer vacation, but I spent some time up at my family's lake cabin in Coeur d'Alene, on the Coeur d'Alene Lake, and we also, where else did I go? My husband got to go to Italy. So that's really cool, but I didn't get to go. But I did get to, for work, it wasn't vacation, but it sometimes feels like it because I got to do some camping on the South Fork of the Clearwater River.
Oh, that's nice.
So that was really gorgeous, and it's so beautiful. If you haven't ever camped down there, gosh, go down there because it's...
Like around where? Around
between Stites and Elk City.
Ah, yeah.
So it's really a gorgeous river in that section of river.
And quite remote.
It is remote, yeah. Where I had to have done something. I really do think that I was pretty adamant with gas prices the way they were to kind of do some stay staying closer to home. And we actually, when my husband got home from Italy, we did a staycation, and I just didn't come to work, but we did a lot of work on our house. So that was really great. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I spent a lot of time at the family lake cabin. It's just been one of those things that I had known that I wanted to do this year because Ellis was going to be gone in Italy. And it's just a close place so that I can take my dogs, and it's a safe place. And you can have a lot of fun on the dock and just be. So that's what I did. We are planning to go on our winter vacation in Mexico, though.
Oh, good.
We're going to take our honeymoon finally, so I'm really excited.
That's great. Yeah. We're in Mexico.
We're going to Puerto Vallarta. So.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Do you have any other place on your list of places, any other thing on your list of places you really want to go? I mean, Mexico.
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe
I mean, I want to get to see my friend Tiffany in Santa Barbara.
Oh, yeah.
And to take a yoga retreat there. And then what else do I mean, I, of course, want to do a bunch of really big things. Like, I would love to go and go back to Africa. And I also would like to go to Australia at some point. But
yeah. But back to Africa.
I've been to South Africa, but I want to go to, other regions in Africa. Just, like, the northern part, the northern parts of Africa, because the continent.
What's intriguing about it to you?
Gosh, Africa as a continent is just like, they're so melodic, you know. I had a friend that was in Ghana, and another friend of mine, where was she? Anyway, she just said that she was a teacher at the schools, and the children just, they learn to sing at such a young age and use their voices, and they harmonize together. They're just, I don't know, it just seems like what a cool... thing to be a part, to be able to hear, you know, and to see that culture is so different. So, but I don't know. I just am intrigued.
Cool.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
then leave me.
Joining me for this Yin Radio show called Summer Travel. You can listen to past shows or podcast this show or sign up for our electronic newsletter at yinradio.org. Or you can drop us a line at yinradio at vpfound.org. That's yinradio at V as in voice, P as in power, found.org. Yin Radio is made possible by grants from the Avon Hello Tomorrow Fund, Latah County Community Foundation, the Fund for Idaho, Pride Foundation Northwest, Open Meadows Foundation, Tri-State Distributors, and friends and listeners who've supported Yin Radio. Yin Radio is produced at KRFP Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho. I am Sandy Billings, your executive producer and host. The opening music is by Piano Chocolat, and we're ending this summer travel show with music by Neo Key. Yin Radio is a production of VP Foundation. Thanks for joining me. Until next week.